the March 21st meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee, and before Representative Petersburg sits down, he may want to sit down at the testifying table, because we're going to take your bill first this morning. Just a couple of general announcements this morning before we get started here. The bills that we are going to be hearing, we are going to be referring to the committees, even though they have missed a deadline, and those of you who are veterans of the legislature know that they will most likely be intercepted by rules, and then rules will decide what they want to do with them at that point, but we are going to look at moving the bills accordingly. Representative Petersburg, you have House File 2447, and as you are getting ready this morning, I'm going to ask if Representative Swazinski has had a chance to review the minutes from our meeting of Thursday, March 16th, 2017. Representative Swazinski.
Yes, I move the minutes.
Representative Swazinski moves the minutes from the meeting of March 16th, 2017. Any corrections, deletions? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Petersburg, I will bring before the committee House File 2447 to be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. And with that, Representative Petersburg, if you'll introduce the bill for the committee. And welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for hearing this bill. This bill is a fairly straightforward, short bill revolving around third-party appeals process for denial of driveway permits. The state law requires that when a business builds or a new highway is built, that driveway is permissible and has to be provided. And so a permit is required, and when that permit results in a location of driveway in which the owner feels that it is inappropriate or whatever, the current process requires that the last word is by the same party that made the first recommendation. And so what this does, and we've worked through this process over the last few years, puts it into an administrative law judge process, in which then that recommendation is made to the Commissioner of Transportation, who makes the final determination. So basically this allows us to have a little bit more due process in regards to the appeals process. And I do have somebody here for a resource if other questions are needed. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will answer questions.
Representative Petersburg, do you have any other testifiers this morning other than Mr. Coyle to answer questions? Okay. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to offer testimony on the bill before the committee at this time? Representative Nelson, I will get to you in just a second. You're just going to see if we've got any public testimony this morning. Anyone wishing to speak on the matter before the committee this morning? House File 2447 before the committee. Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Nelson.
And Mr. Chair, I believe that the reason this is here is that in effect, it exempts the commissioner. Well, it says the commission must use the expedited process, rules process. So, and that's what it's here for. It's and Mr. Chair, this it seems the appropriate way to deal with these situations.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I like the intent of the bill to allow for an avenue for a citizen who is feeling aggrieved. But again, as in many situations, we utilize the this process, and then the commissioner is allowed to totally ignore it when a decision is made. And to me, it seems like false hope. I've been in hearings where, you know, example is that, you know, PUC, a routing decision goes to administrative judge and gets a hearing, and a decision comes out, and the people were all right. We were heard. We won. Then the commission meets, and they don't show up because they feel they won, and a bunch of people on the other side show up, and the final outcome is they lost. And I hope that we can look at a way of taking away that false hope that oftentimes winning in this process is. But thank you very much for the bill.
Members, other questions on House File 2447 that's before the committee? Seeing no other testimony, Representative Petersburg will give you a chance to share some final thoughts before we put it to a vote before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just ask for your support. It's fairly straightforward, and thank you for hearing the bill.
I will renew my motion that House File 2447 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Petersburg, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
The next bill that we'll hear is 2426. Representative Whalen, I believe, is here. There she is, as she's making her way to the testifying table. I will move House File 2426 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And with that, Representative Whalen, welcome to the committee. There's a DE1 amendment. Is that an author's amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Would you like me to move the author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that you were looking for this morning, Representative Whalen?
I would like that, Mr. Chair.
I will move the DE1 amendment. Questions, members, on the DE1 amendment to House File 2426? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment to House File 2426 to get it in the shape that the author wishes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Representative Whalen, the bill is in the form that you'd like. Please proceed with your presentation this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing the bill today. In short, the bill establishes a working group that will take a look at our property tax system and develop a couple proposals for reform. And I have a lot of information here. I'm willing to go through more of the prescriptions of the bill. I can also just take questions if you would like.
Representative Whalen, if you want to just give us a little background as to what the purpose of the bill is, and members are really good about asking questions on this committee. So,
right. So in 2010, this body passed a bill to form a working group on property taxes, which was comprised of legislators, members of the Department of Revenue, and other stakeholders. Many seem to agree with the principles and various recommendations laid out, yet it also seems that in the 5 years since its release, very little has changed. We continue to hear bills that would make the problem worse, which leads me to my first point, which is the problem we have in property taxes. And the working group report from 2012 lays this out well, is that, quote, Minnesota property tax is a complex system. To better understand why complexity is an issue and to better start to think about how we can best address it, I think it also helps to understand how we got here. To be brief, I'm just going to quote a few things from the 2012 report. Classifications have changed nearly every legislative session dating back to 1941. Complexity in our property tax system seems to stem from the introduction of the income tax. Property taxes were formerly the main source of income for the state, not just localities. We had the Great Depression in 1933, and there was a huge demand for property tax relief. And so individual and corporate income taxes arrived on the scene, and the first of many changes was made to the state's classification system. One of the biggest changes came in 1967 with a sales tax. In the 1980s, we switched from assessed value and mill rates to tax capacity. And now, as you often hear, we have one of the most complex, if not the most complicated, tax system in the country. We have 55 different classifications, a variety of reductions in taxable value through exemptions and exclusions, 47 categories for exemptions to be exact, six exclusions, differential weighting of taxable value through classification and multiple tax bases, reduction in vital tax plus through credits, 11, and then there are also some that impact parcel taxes, refunds after taxes are paid, etc. I think this is poor governance, and again, as the property tax report from 2012 notes, when tax complexity is too great, taxpayers have little hope of identifying how their taxes are specifically calculated. This breeds anger and distrust, as they are expected to take it on faith that they are being treated fairly and correctly. They do not know how to keep state and local government officials accountable for outcomes and hear mixed messages that they cannot assess. So I will confess for myself, members, that I think this is an issue that for policymakers, we, when we grapple with all of these questions, we're handicapped and we become reactionary rather than strategic. It's not the fault of any one member, but rather a history that we have created over the years. And so taking a next step from that 2012 working group report and getting a group of legislators, bipartisan, together to really tackle this and to propose a couple of ways that we can see comprehensive reform is the goal of the bill, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Whalen. Do you have any testifiers that you have for your bill today? I know we have some folks that have signed up. Do you have any testifiers that you'd like to bring forward at this time?
I do not believe so, Mr. Chair. I had a couple that were maybe, but I don't know if they were able to get here.
Okay. Well, we'll go to Representative Nelson has a question, and then we'll bring up public testimony. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, this is here because of the task force. We know that. I find it interesting the testimony of the of Representative Whalen. I just kind of made the same argument half hour ago up in property taxes, and with Representative Whalen there, that There's a lot of portions of the bill. I tried to delete a portion out of the bill that would have added to the complexity of our tax system. And there's plenty of things in the property tax bill that's going forward that are going to tweak and do this and do that, and again add to the complexity. But I think this is a good bill. We should look at it. We should always be able to want to look back and see if we can make things more understandable, more less complex. But like I said, I find it interesting that her argument that she's making about the complexity and how we've tweaked it here, tweaked it there, and made all these different things that yet we're right now as we speak upstairs in the meeting room two, that it's 200, that they're, the bill that's going forward is going to again add to more complexity in our system. So,
Representative Whalen, did you want to respond to Representative Nelson's comment? We usually give people a chance to do that as testifiers. We like to watch the sparring go back and forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. You make a great point, and it goes back to what I said. As policymakers, I think on both sides of the aisle, we're guilty of being reactionary rather than strategic, and we are reacting to a system that we have in place, and it will take a lot of hard work to get a bipartisan agreement on how we can actually address the systemic issues in property tax.
Are there any other member questions at this time? Otherwise, if not, I'm going to go to the list. I have one person who has signed up in advance, but I'll just see if he's here. Michael Stayberger from the Minnesota Association of County Officers. Not seeing anyone rush forward at that invitation. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to the matter before the committee? House File 2426 as amended. Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Nash, back to member questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you make the torture go on longer?
The torture go on longer? Well, we've got more bills. Maybe we'll pick up some speed at that point. Who knows? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you, Representative Whalen, for bringing this forward. I do have a constituent who has been really struggling with all the different classifications and tried to make some changes, so I'm really looking forward to moving forward on this and getting some good results from it.
Other member questions or comments? Representative Kwong?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while I have great agreement with some of the statements from Representative Nelson, the fact is until we decide to tear this structure down and build a new from scratch, I think we're going to be forced to do the tweaking. It's like the old farmhouse that you put an addition on, and at night when you're walking, you got to be careful not to trip because things don't quite smoothly match up. That until we actually do the hard work, of which I hope this bill helps get that going, we're going to have to suffer through trying to make improvements to the structure we've got. But what, a 56-room home that was built at different times and different intents inherently needs a great deal of upkeep. So I hope this bill does allow us to tear it down, build from scratch, and have a shiny new wonderful system in the future.
Well, thank you for that analogy, Representative Kwong. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I think this is a good bill. I think it does us no harm to look at our system, but I was just pointing out that as we speak and we're talking about making the system simpler, the property tax division of tax committees upstairs adding to the complexity, and sometimes we put that complexity in because certain properties meet certain things, and we want to make sure that we treat everyone equal. As if a simple system that everyone's taxed at one way would have a lot of winners and a lot of losers, and probably more losers, and they'd be here screaming at us because, you know, as we know, my piece of property is this, and it's different from that piece of property, and therefore it should have a different classification, and that's what adds to the complexity. So simplicity may not always be as good as we want, but looking at it is a good thing, and I support the bill, and I think we should move it forward. It's to have this task force look at it and come back with recommendations.
Representative Nelson, all you have to do is spend one meeting on a local property tax review board, and you know how complex this is, and mm-hmm. I had the privilege of doing that for 10 years, and not only in our jurisdiction, but because I was certified, I got the chance to go on the road and share those meetings for others. So I've had my fair share, and you are spot on. Representative Nelson.
And Mr. Chair, as I heard Representative Quam speak, I thought about the, and come to mind is, if anyone's ever been in the Minneapolis City Hall, when that was originally built, it was shared by Minneapolis and the Hennepin County, and they couldn't even decide on the level of the floors. And if you look at the floors, they don't even line up in one half of the building to the other, because one built it one way and one built it the other on the inside. So, yeah, it's complexities. There is something we're not going to be able to get away from.
Representative Jessup.
Chair, Representative Whalen, I just want to say thank you. Thank you on behalf of all Minnesotans. So many of the constituents in the communities that I represent received their property tax bill over the last week. So your bill is most timely. Thank you again.
Other member questions and discussions on House File 2426? Seeing none, hearing none, Representative Whalen will give you the final word as we consider the vote on this today. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the comments and questions. I really appreciate your support on the bill, and whatever solutions the task force comes up with, I know they'll need legislative appeal, and I'm hoping for a lot of bipartisan support. So as we continue to go forward, please reach out to me. I'd love to get your thoughts and feedback, and thank you again for hearing the bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Whalen, thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 2426, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Whalen, you are on your way. The next bill that we will be bringing up is House File 1433, Representative Cresha. And as Representative Cresha is making his way to the testifiers table, members, you will recall that we had House File 1433 before us previously, and there is a pent-up demand within the legislature to try to get our arms around some of this rulemaking. So Representative Cresha is back once again, and we're looking to move that bill today. So Representative Cresha, I'm going to move that House File 1433 be re-referred to the committee, be brought forward and be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. And Representative Cresha, before we get started, since we have heard this before, I know that we've got some testifiers who have had testified on the matter previously. I'm going to simply ask that if they come forward, if they have additional information, that they let us know that, or that they want to just underscore the comments that they've made previously. I don't know if there's a need to necessarily reiterate all comments that have been made in the previous discussion on this. We did have about a 30-minute hearing or so on this. So just when we get to that question stage, I'll remind people of that as well. So Representative Cresha, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you. Welcome to the committee once again, sir.
And thank you, Mr. Bill. Chair and members. I think we've fully had the conversations on this bill many times, so I would prefer as well just if the testifiers have something new, I'd love to hear that. Otherwise, I'm open to dealing with the amendments.
Very good. Member questions at this point? Seeing none, I'll defer to the list of people who have signed up in advance. Ms. Lily Falihai from the Friends of the Mississippi River. Good morning and welcome to the committee. And as I had said, I know you had testified extensively on this previously. If there's some additional things that we need to know about those or get some of the highlights and underscore some of the things for the committee's recollection, that would be extremely helpful. Welcome. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lely Fadahi, and I represent Friends of the Mississippi River. You've heard me testify previously on this bill, and you've heard me say that I think that this bill is a political strategy. I believe last time I described it as being deregulation by overregulation, and I'll come back to that. I want to put that aside for a minute, and I want to look at this bill just at the level of description and logic. The proponents of this bill hope that this bill will make agency rulemaking faster, cheaper, more flexible, less redundant, less top-down, and all without compromising our health, safety, environment, et cetera, and without compromising on public transparency and accountability.
And, Mr. Chair, that's a statement of motives and intent.
I'll just ask you to pursue with your testimony.
I don't take issue with this, I agree, or it is my opinion, if not that of the proponents, that we should be pushing for laws and policies that drive agencies and the processes to do better by these criteria. But what is in this bill is antithetical to these kinds of outcomes. So, for example, with respect to speed, the bill grants the legislature an arsenal of delay tactics by which to block not just existing rules, but also proposed rules. And it expands those grounds by which the legislature can block even a proposed rule to include everything from lack of necessity, redundancy, economic impact, being unduly burdensome, being more restrictive than a federal requirement. However, the bill doesn't include anything that requires a factual determination that any of these conditions actually exist. There's no criteria by which the legislative committee can make, you know, is supposed to make a determination as to any of these grounds. And then on top of this, it raises the agency's burden in judicial proceedings to appeal a legislative block to include not just demonstrating the validity of a rule, but rather demonstrating that the legislative block is not justifiable on the basis of this expanded list of grounds put in the bill, meaning that an agency has to go to court to challenge a block by the legislature. I don't see what is possibly cheap or more efficient or faster about such an approach. Furthermore, the bill gives the LCC the authority to recommend legislation that would either approve that would approve a proposed rule or prohibit its adoption, its amendment, its repeal. But in the meanwhile, the bill indicates that the agency cannot adopt a proposed rule in question until after a new session begins and adjourns, creating again an unjustifiable delay, indicating that, you know, even if the LCC is able to come up with a recommendation quickly, the bill still blocks the agency from acting for more than a year without any justification. Looking in addition to redundancy and costs in addition to speed, the bill also creates multiple mechanisms that guarantee that pretty much under any circumstance, a redundant five-person, quote-unquote, peer review panel can be ordered to determine or to re-review, essentially, the soundness of a proposed or existing rule, scientific, technical, or economic basis, all of which are factors already determined by the agency under requirements in both the APA and in many instances also required under the originating statute for whatever, you know, subject matter area of rulemaking this may be. And again, you know, it's a five-person review panel of experts, again, comes with significant costs and delays with no indication as to why it's needed or where it creates any sorts of improvements. And then, you know, finally, the bill essentially makes it so that regardless of what the outcome of that review panel is, the agency can't do anything with the rule until it's enacted by law by the legislature, which is something that could have happened on day one. So the addition of all of these additional delays, costs, and redundancies just to get to the point where the legislature needs to make an enactment by law to begin with. And the other big area, you know, where I see problems with this bill has to do with this issue of public transparency and accountability, especially given that the bill allows for there to be a legislative block at the point that an agency proposes a rule. My concern comes with agencies, and I don't mean to suggest that any of our current agencies would engage in this, but I think given this has been a concern that clearly the legislature has seen fit to address in the APA, that if an agency comes up with an idea for a proposed rule rather than going through the process of actually proposing it so that the public has notice and an opportunity for input, rather those kinds of discussions are done more behind closed doors to avoid triggering the requirements in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. questions of the testifiers? Seeing none and hearing none, is there anyone else from the public who'd like to testify on the matter before the committee this morning? Anyone else wishing to testify on the matter before the committee? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll close the public testimony portion. There are two amendments, a DE3 and a DE2 amendment. Anyone wanting to offer the DE2 or DE3? Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE3 is, I believe, mine. I'm not sure who the DE2 is. That looks like somebody wants just to make this a task force. But that's mine, too. Okay.
I bet you do. That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll do the DE3 first.
All right.
Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, the DE3 amendment, what it does is, in 2014, we went through this process of rulemaking, and we actually had a bill that passed the House bipartisanly. We worked with all the stakeholders, got agreement from the chamber, we got agreement from the interest groups, we worked with the governor's staff to try and streamline and make the rulemaking process better. And that's what the DE3 amendment is. It's putting in, it's that bill that we passed back then that the other body messed around with it and didn't pass it in the other side, so it couldn't become law. But this was product of a lot of hard work from a lot of, and including Representative Kreshen, I think, helped work on parts of this, that we moved this forward, and it simplified things. It made it easier to get rid of obsolete rules. It made it easier to get rules started that were required. And so that's what this bill does. And that's my amendment, and Mr. Chair, moving this forward. I said this was the product of a lot of hard work by a lot of people from all sides, and that's why I'm moving the DE3 amendment forward.
Representative Kreshen is the author of the bill. Your comments on the DE3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Nelson, well, thank you for bringing the amendment forward. You're right. And that, I think, is something that everyone needs to understand. It's, you know, this just wasn't pulled out of the air to go against the environmental standards. This is a process that we've been working on in a bipartisan fashion for a long time because there are hiccups in the rulemaking process. What you have in the DE, frankly, a lot of this is already in my bill. And I think a lot of what's in here can be used for discussion as we go to conference committee with the other body. And so at this point, rather than making this a DE, what I would suggest is that we don't enact this amendment, that we don't do a delete all, but we use this as one of the resources that I have as we go forward, because there will be give and take. I'm just not ready to give all those concessions in now until I've had a chance to say on the record, bludgeon my opponents on the other side.
We do have an interesting committee the meeting this morning. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I was talking here, and as I paused, I was looking, because one of the things that was in the DE amendment that I liked, and I don't know if that's I don't did see it in the bill, but one of the pieces had to do with people objecting to new rules. I mean, one of the problems we have currently is the rule comes out, they put it out for comment, and I object to the rule. Well, what part of the rule do you object to, and why? And that's something we put in the bill we passed 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, that when you object to a rule, you got to object under list what part of the rule you object to and why you object to it. Because if there's an issue that can be worked out, that's when they can work it out. Oftentimes now they just object to the rule and don't say why. Well, why do you object to it? I can't fix it if I don't know how to fix it or what you object to. So, and that's one of the things that was good about that bill. We went forward, and again, it passed the House. Our friends in the other body chose not to mess with it and not go forward with it. But, Mr. Chair, that's why I propose the DE3 amendment and ask for your vote.
Representative Kreshen.
And I should be clear, and thank you. When I say opponents, I actually mean the other body. Everyone here is my friends. And so what I
was talking about,
Representative Kreshen, that's the concession fight that we're waiting to have. Offer the amendment if you want to get a vote. My commitment to you is I would like to use this as we go forward to try to get to an agreement. You put a lot of work into this. The agencies have as well, and I see that conversation moving forward. So, you know, if we need to today take the vote, that's fine. But I think I know where the outcome will be, but I will tell you have my word that this will be used as we go forward.
Representative Nelson, just a point of inquiry for you. I don't remember seeing this being introduced as a bill this year for the committee. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm just clarifying the facts on that. Okay. Other member questions at this time on the DE3 amendment that is before the committee? Representative Creech, we'll give you the final word on the DE3 before we act on it.
No, I'm good.
All right. All those in favor of adopting the DE3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. To the DE2 amendment, I think that's also yours, Representative Nelson. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE2 amendment, again, as I talked, we did a lot of work on that bill when we passed it the last time in the House. And there needs to be a lot of work on that. When we're looking at rulemaking, we need to look at all sides of that, from the administration's point of view, from the citizens' point of view that the rules are going to affect, from the special interest groups that are proposing rules and want to protect different parts of our state. So what the DE2 amendment says, sets up a task force, which will look into this and come forward and bring recommendations to us on the rulemaking process, because I know there's a lot of nation in the capital, there's been a lot of talk about rulemaking and changing the rulemaking, but Minnesota's rulemaking process is not Washington's rulemaking process. We have a process here where citizens get input, citizens can request meetings. We have the sonars, the statement of need and reasonableness that they have to go forward before they bring the rules. We have the legislative or the Office of Legislative Hearings that overlook the rules that when they go forward, so that when a rule comes out, does the department have the authorization to do that? Is it within their mandate? And that's so we have lots of checks in there so that departments can't go willy-nilly and make up rules that they want to make. They have a process they have to go through. We get a lot of citizen input, and we get a lot of input from a lot of different interest groups that come forward, both pro and con to any new rules that are brought forward. So, Mr. Chair, I would the DE2 amendment is there to set up this task force to look at this, come back to us, because that's where it will start the rulemaking process, and with recommendations of what to go forward, because we really haven't had enough time to look at this. I know over the years we worked on this, but this bill that came forward this year, we really haven't had time to look at this and talk about this and hash it out and get all the people involved to come forward and sit in a room together and argue back and forth to say and hammer out an agreement on different language. So, Mr. Chair, that's what the DE2 amendment does, and I'd like a roll call on that amendment.
To the bill author.
Yep.
And the DE2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I got up this morning, and the kids got to school on time. I went to the drive-thru, and there was nobody there, so I got my coffee right away. And I arrived at work, and, I'm feeling pretty good. So I thought, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, if we could make an oral amendment to this where we take the delete everything out and we just enact this amendment at the end of the bill, I'll take the amendment.
Representative Nelson, it sounds like he's willing to adopt the task force if you're willing to add that to the House File 1433.
Mr. Chair, I would, going forward, I don't have an objection to that. I guess I would accept that amendment to the amendment. The only concern I have is that this is going forward. What happens in the next committee? If we put it on into the agreement and they strip it out, then we're back at, okay, we made Mr. Representative Nelson happy, and now we're going to stick it to him in the next committee and take it out. That's the concern I'd have. So,
can I speak to that, Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson, is stick it to him a technical term? I'm not.
Well, I would say knife him in the back or bludgeon him. Is the term there? No,
you're not in the Senate.
We're having a rather violent committee.
I'm language. I looked at my word of the day calendar, and none of these words were on there today. Just for the record, Representative Creesha.
Thank you. Miss Representative Nelson and committee members, let me tell you what my hope is as we try to go forward. Certainly we know that this bill can be taken up as amendments in a couple other places. There's some things that are happening that may or may not be in my control. But here's what I do know. I know that the chair has talked about doing some of this work in the interim. And out of respect for that, and I think that's a good direction to go, I think by taking this and adding it on, it strengthens the position of what you're asking for, and what the chair is asking for is that regardless of the outcome of this session, that we continue this work in the interim. And so that's the spirit of which I'm trying to do this. I'm really not trying to appease you or placate you. I'm not trying to do any of that. I understand those comments. What I'm actually telling you is I think you've brought a good idea to the table. And rather than just do a roll call vote and take the outcome of that, I would ask maybe we move this into the bill, we take that, and we continue moving forward, knowing that there are going to be multiple paths. So that's what I would offer to you. Obviously, it's your amendment, and I'll leave it up to you to choose which path you'd like, and I respect either one.
Representative Kreischer, just a point of consideration. As you move forward with this bill, assuming that it gets re-referred to the next committee, would this language be helpful or hurtful, do you think, in using the term that you've brought forward that's become somewhat commonplace, bludgeoning the other side with the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that it'll matter one way or the other. I mean, as far as helpful or hurtful in trying. I mean, many, many people are trying to do this rulemaking, and it's because, you know, let's just be honest. We're representatives for our communities. That's what our job is, and it's our job to put together the good policy and to fight for those things. And there are times when the agencies, for whatever reason, make a rule that goes against what we believe a legislative intent was. And then we're back here fighting that. And I think all of us that have been involved in the rulemaking are trying to set that straight and trying to do our job, which is to be a representative for the 39,000 voters or 39,000 residents. That's all this is. And there are times when those rules make it very difficult for our communities and our businesses and so forth, and we're just trying to address that. So, I mean, we can do this either way. I think in good faith, by taking it shows that we acknowledge the good efforts of Representative Nelson, because he's been doing many of these discussions far longer than I have. So I guess to your question whether it helps or hurts, I'm not sure either way, because I think whatever happens at the end of the committee, I'll be talking to Representative Nelson on the floor, and we'll still continue the dialogues we do behind the scenes. But I think having the task force in the language as opposed to just falling on a roll call is more helpful.
Representative Nelson?
Well, Mr. Chair, I will accept that language, and we'll get the staff to write it up the way we have to do it. And with that, I'll remove the roll call. But I still
we could have kumbaya.
Point having a roll call for again. We're all going to vote yes.
Maybe.
We're all vote no. We could go either way.
Let's check with Mr. Gehring before we both get ourselves in any more trouble, see how we can maybe make this happen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, so I think what you could do is you could incorporate a change to your amendment. Because you're the amendment author, you can just incorporate it without a committee vote. And what you would do would be on line 1.2, you delete line 1.2, and you would insert page 26 after line 21, insert. And then on 1.3, the new section number would be section 32. And that would convert this amendment from a DE amendment to a page and line amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, I will. That's my
okay. Incorporating that into my amendment. DE2 amendment. Representative Kreischer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson. And again, I just want to reiterate, we're not far apart. We're actually trying to get to the same goal. It's just how do we make that policy reflect the concerns we have. So, I would accept that, and I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Members, questions on the DE2 amendment as adopted, Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and yes. As we go forward with this, I still have concerns about the underlying bill. It's in effect, even with the task force on it now. In effect, we're making changes, and then we're going to look at them afterwards. So we're kind of doing it, putting the cart before the horse and making wholesale changes. And some of the stuff there, yes, it makes it harder to put new rules in place that going forward, but it also makes it harder for the departments to eliminate obsolete redundant rules and do all the things that they do on a regular basis, send us forth every year. These are rules we no longer need. These are rules we want to tweak because to make them better for the citizens. So it makes it more difficult to fix the rules as well as put new rules in. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I accept the
roll call, yes or no?
No roll call.
Roll call being removed. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment as adopted signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion carries. To the bill as adopted and amended, Representative Kreischer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you for the discussion. I guess I would just add this. I mean, I have a specific example of why I'm doing this as well. It's not easy work legislating, and we just hope we get it right. One example is 2 years ago, I put forward an MTA bill that said the PUC had 180 days to close an application and either approve or disapprove of it. Our legislative intent for the telecom companies was once they started the process, the clock started running, and what we're trying to do was get the PUC to give us 180 days to give a response because businesses need certainty. The PUC decided to make it into a rule, and they said, well, we interpret that as 180 days after you've got all your paperwork in. So essentially, they could drag their feet and push this out. So this was completely contrary to what we were trying to do in legislative intent, and it set the industry aside and it drug their feet again. My point in this is I think we've all made legislation and we've all passed policies that we were trying to fix a specific problem, and somebody else inadvertently or advertently did something else in a rulemaking process that was against that intent. If this is not the right answer, then maybe we just accept the agencies, but I think we also take away our right to complain about rulemaking when it happens if we aren't going to fight for a more efficient process.
Other member questions? Seeing none and hearing none. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I just like a roll call on the total bill, even though my amendment did go on for the task force. Like I said, as I said in my previous statement, I still have concerns about this bill. Like I said, I would rather have had it just as the task force going forward to give us a chance to look at this and look at it in the interim. But Mr. Chair, just one other point that I want to make is that Representative Crucia talks about being a representative for his 39,000 people in his district. But when I was a freshman, and one of the things they stressed to us is that I'm not the Brooklyn Park representative. We're our state representative is our title, and we're supposed to look at what's good for the whole state. And yes, we take in consideration what our constituents and our legislative districts want, but we are state representatives, and we are there to look at what's good for the whole state, not just my little slice of it. So,
other member discussion? Seeing none, a roll call being requested, I will renew my motion that House File 1433, as amended, be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Pugh?
Yes.
Bliss?
Yes.
Fenton?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Jessup?
Yes.
Lee?
No.
Mason?
No.
Nash?
Yep.
Nelson?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Quam?
Yes.
Samstead?
No.
Swidzinski?
Yep.
Tice?
Yes.
West?
Yes.
Youlakim?
No.
There being 11 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails. House File 1433 will be re-referred to this Committee on State Government Finance as amended.
Thank you,
Mr. Representative Crucia. With that, we'll bring Representative Zerwas forward. House File 464. Representative Zerwas. Okay. Then what we will do is we'll revert to House File 2419, and I'm going to ask Representative Peterson to come in and assume the gavel at this point as we work with House File 2419.
Representative Driscoll, would you like to move House File 2419?
To be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance, Madam Chair.
All right. And do you want to move your DE amendment right away, or do you want to go ahead and talk to you about your bill first?
What I'd like to do is talk about the bill and then... I will take the DE1 amendment after I set up the bill just to give people an idea of what we're looking at. House File 2419 deals with some housekeeping-related activities that are associated with the Campaign Finance Board and the scope of their purview as an entity or an organization here in the state of Minnesota. What the DE1 amendment does is it provides some language that the Senate has also put into a bill similar to what we have, and so to try to keep some consistency with that and avoid additional work either in other committees or on the House floor, we want to adopt the DE1 amendment so that we're consistent with the language on this. And many of the things that you're going to see in the DE1 amendment are part of the rulemaking that the department considers also to be non-controversial, or the Campaign Finance Board considers to be non-controversial. And so with that, I would ask for the DE1 amendment. I will move the DE1 amendment to House File 2419, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the A1 amendment, which is basically what it does. It takes out the rulemaking portions that we're changing in the DE1 amendment. It leaves the rulemaking the way it is.
So, Representative Nelson, would you like to move
I move the A1 amendment, yes.
All right. And do you want to discuss any further about the A1 amendment, or shall we?
Well, Madam Chair, and as I read the DE1 amendment and as I read this rulemaking, would have to be done before July 1st or June 1st of 2017. And then, like I said, moving forward, I think we need to give the department, the Campaign Finance Board, the ability to make the adjust rules as they need to adjust them going forward. This strikes them of their rulemaking ability, the way I read the amendment.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson is correct. The bill and the DE do take away the rulemaking authority of the Campaign Finance Board and requires legislative approval for that process. And Representative Nelson's amendment absolutely does what he says. It strips out that section that would leave rulemaking in the hands of the Campaign Finance Board. Members, I would encourage a no vote on the A1 amendment.
Any further discussion on the A1 amendment to the DE amendment? Representative Nelson.
I'd like a roll call.
And a roll call has been requested. Okay, so any further discussion? A roll call being requested. A roll call will be taken.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
Nope.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Jessup?
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Swadzinski?
No.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Samstead's here.
Samstead?
Yes.
There being 10 nays and 5 ayes, the A1 amendment is not adopted.
Madam Chair, now we need to move to the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form that I'd like.
All right. Any discussion on the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, to be quite honest, we've had the discussion on the bill through the amendment process.
Okay, so we do have one member, Jeff Sergeson, with the Executive Director of Minnesota Campaign Finance Board, that would like to testify on the bill. Mr. Sergeson, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff Sergeson, Executive Director of Campaign Finance Board. As Representative Driscoll mentioned, the other body had a very similar bill with a very similar, if not exact, amendment. That was passed in February in the Senate, and at that point, I brought forth that language to the board to consider at its March 1st meeting. And after considering the impact of, after reviewing the impact of that amendment, the board adopted the following resolution. Board resolves that amendments designed to curtail the board's rulemaking authority will impair its ability to carry out its functions under Minnesota Statutes 10A and 211B in a consistent manner to the benefit of the regulated community and the public. Again, this was adopted unanimously at the March 1st, 2017 meeting. Just briefly, for the committee's consideration, the board is especially concerned about the issue of consistency. Administrative rules allow the board to take, provide in a very important, sensitive area, consistent guidelines for the regulated community, whether it be treasurers, candidates, lobbyists, public officials who are trying to fill out their economic interest statement. It's through the administrative rule process that the board can provide a consistent answer rather than leaving itself in a position where who you get on the phone might determine the answer that you have for a particular question. It allows us to go through the administrative rule process, work with the regulated community, and provide that standard in a consistent method that's easy to access. Secondly, it does, the administrative rulemaking process, we believe, allows the agency to use the expertise that it has built up on Chapter 10A and 211B and the working relationships that it has with the regulated community to the benefit of both. For example, if in Chapter 14 on adopting administrative rules, you have to have an outreach program which is approved by the Office of Administrative Hearings in which you reach out to all possible entities that might be affected by the administrative rules, and at least through the Campaign Finance Board, as long as I've been there, there has always been a rules subcommittee and rules hearings where we ask people to come in, comment on the drafts, help us develop the drafts, and produce a better administrative rule. For example, in 2002, to give you a quick review, the board adopted a set of rules on lobbying disbursements and how lobbyists report the amount that they spend on lobbying in Minnesota. Not exactly a real interesting area, but the board looked at the current requirement, which is in statute, is to provide disclosure to the public on what's being spent on lobbying, and then considered that in Minnesota there's about 4,000 lobbyist association combinations, in other words, lobbyists who are registered for multiple associations. Under the old procedure, you had to have 4,000 reports come in because each lobbyist had to fill out a report for every association they represented. Under the administrative rules, which was developed over a two-month process with the Minnesota Government Relations Council, which of course is the lobbying organization in Minnesota, it was developed a process of what's called reporting lobbyists, so that only one lobbyist for an association that has multiple lobbyists needs to fill out the report. They can consolidate all the disbursements for the other lobbyists. There's only one report. We go from 4,000 reports to about 700. That makes it easier on the regulated community. It makes it easier on board staff in processing those rules. And perhaps most importantly, it makes it easier for the public and the media to be able to access those reports, and instead of trying to add up numbers from 4,000 reports, you just look at 700 reports. I would respectfully suggest that that's not the type of process that any of you wanted to become elected for. I mean, it was a two-month of very meticulous administrative rulemaking on reporting. It's the type of work that the board does to try to help, again, the regulated community provide a better access to information to the public, and yet keep in mind the statutory guidance that's being provided by the legislature to get that disclosure from the public. In fact, if you look at the rulemaking that the board makes, it's almost exclusively in direct response to specific direction from the legislature. It's true that the board has a broad rulemaking authority that to do rules on the provisions of Chapter 10A. But more specifically, it also has authority to do rules, in fact, not authority, a requirement to do rules. In 2014, the board was given the responsibility using the expedited rulemaking process to adopt rules for audits and investigations conducted by the board. So again, the legislature directed the agency to come up with an expedited rulemaking process. In 2005, the board was directed to in Chapter 10A, to adopt rules on electronic filing to keep them secure and provide the information that the public needs to have. Currently, the board has two dockets, the non-controversial rules, which Representative Driscoll mentioned, which is basically incorporated in the bill that you have in front of you. And then we have also a set of rules, which are more controversial, which we are holding hearings on, which are looking to move, again, through specific direction from the from the legislature, to move those advisory opinions that have a broader application than to just the individual or association that asked the advisory opinion. If the board believes it has a broader application that other people should be able to rely on, we are required to adopt administrative rules to move those advisory opinions, again, into the administrative rulemaking process so that it's accessible and it applies to everybody, which is basically, not exclusively, but basically what's going on with the more controversial rules that the board is considering and working on now. And then lastly, if you go back to the lobbying disbursements, admittedly that was done in the general authority on a specific topic, but then you have to go back to 1996 for the next rulemaking authority or rulemaking docket that the board had that was on more general topics. So again, the board doesn't do administrative rules just because it seems like a good idea. It does so generally in direct response to legislative direction to do so. Certainly in 14 and in 2005 and 2002, that was the case. It was mentioned briefly, but I would like to state, as somebody who has gone through the administrative rulemaking process, both with the board and with my other agencies that I've worked for, that the Office of Administrative Hearings should not be underestimated, and neither should Chapter 14, as being effective watchdogs for the legislature. We have always found that complying with the sonar requirement, complying with the notification process, and again, working with those entities that wish to come in and comment and adjust the proposed language is an extremely productive process. Even on our current dockets, which we're now done with at least the second draft of the independent expenditure rules, we've had impact comments that we've incorporated from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, from the Minnesota Association of Realtors, from the MCCCL. Now, I don't know if they will always like all the changes that we're incorporating, but we are at least trying to address their concerns and, again, trying to get the rules to reflect the input that we're receiving from the regulated community. And then lastly, I would suggest that it appears, and I haven't been following all the legislation on administrative rules, that there is a more general approach that's being considered and eventually apparently will go forward to provide the legislature with an oversight of administrative rules that will apply to all agencies. The legislation you just heard and move forward apparently will do that. I would ask that if there is a concern on administrative rules that the board is adopting, that you would provide that input to us now during the process that we have open for you, which, by the way, we deliberately did during session so that there would be easier access for at least legislative staff to attend those hearings, that you would include the board or the more general provisions that will allow you to review the administrative rules the agencies pass as opposed to specific legislation which affects only the board's rulemaking authority. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is the Campaign Finance Board doesn't issue rules that often. I mean, can you explain how many times you've done it in the last 10 or 15 years or so?
Mr.
I'm sure Representative Freiberg, correct. We did them in 2000. We have two dockets are currently up now. We did them in 2014 in response to legislative direction to have rules on the way in which we conduct investigations. We had another set of rules in 2005 dealing with electronic filing of reports. 2002 was the lobbyist filing, which I mentioned and gave you the example on. And then prior to that, 1996. Again, these are all areas where the board felt that it was appropriate to go to administrative rules. And I would point out that the board is certainly aware of that distinction between policy and filling out and providing a procedure to carry out the policy provided by the legislature. As I believe most committee members know, the board often has proposed legislation that isn't clearly would require statutory change and which is clearly in the policy area, which it brings before the legislature to consider. So it's very aware and very sensitive to the idea that when it adopts administrative rules, it's doing so to provide a mechanism to carry out the direction of the legislature, not to try to change the direction of policy as provided by the legislature.
Representative Fireford, follow up. Okay. Representative Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the comments by the testifier and to Representative Fireford. I think that helps make the point why rulemaking is an important function at this point for the Campaign Finance Board. I counted maybe five times in the last 21 years that the Campaign Finance Board promulgated rules. The legislature had 21 out of those 21 years to be able to deal with questions and issues that, as Mr. Segerding said, they bring forward model legislation for the legislature to consider. This wouldn't prevent them from being able to look at, to scope the issue and bring legislative ideas forward. But again, other agencies have more pressing needs because of health and safety and public welfare than with the Campaign Finance Board. And so, again, I just want to underscore five times in 21 years, where each and every one of those years that the legislature met, that model legislation could have been brought forward from what the board is seeing in the campaign world and from what they have their ear to the ground and are picking up from folks. So maybe this is something that we should be bringing back to the legislature.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And members, the board is a bipartisan board. It's specifically when people are appointed to it, they have to declare whether they're Republican or Democrat, and it's divided up that way, so it's balanced, so there's one side or the other doesn't get a political advantage. By taking away their ability to promulgate rules that need to be done for things that come up, we're attacking the watchdog that watches out and keeps an eye on us, making sure we stay honest. Not that anybody in this committee would cause problems or isn't honest, but it keeps other legislative people that are running for legislative offices honest and making sure they run their campaigns fairly. And that's what this does. By taking the ability for them to make rules and adjust what they have to do in case something new comes out, it's sort of like letting the fox guard the hen house. And I have concerns about that. And so with that, Mr. Chair or Madam Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call on this bill.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call will be taken. And Representative Freiberg?
Yeah, just to kind of follow up on that, I mean, it's not a direct comparison, but I remember at the beginning of the year at the federal level, you had Congress try to take away the authority of the Office of Congressional Ethics to do investigations of it, and there was a big backlash against that, understandably so. I mean, here you're taking away a rarely used but surely an important tool in the toolbox of the agency that has authority to regulate us as legislators away, and I guess I just don't know where this is coming from. I just don't see the need for it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you. To that point, in the five times that rulemaking was cited this morning, none of those were issues that required the legislature, or I should say that we're pressing that the legislature couldn't have dealt with to keep peace in the valley and keep the election processes balanced and underway without disadvantaging one party or another on here. The fact that Representative Nelson referred to the idea that the fox is in charge of the hen house, well, the fox created the hen house. The legislature created the Campaign Finance Board and has legislative jurisdiction over the hen house, using the example that Representative Nelson has brought forward.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Are there any other people that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I think we can go to our roll call, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, if you'd like to renew the motion as amended, State Government Finance.
Representative Driscoll renews his motion that House File 2419, as amended, is re-referred to State Government Finance.
O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Pugh?
Aye.
Bliss?
Yes.
Fenton?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Jessup?
Yes.
Lee?
No.
Mason?
No.
Nash?
Yep.
Nelson?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Quam?
Aye.
Samstead?
No.
Swidzinski?
Yeah.
Tice?
Yes.
West?
Yes.
You, Joaquin?
No.
There being 11 ayes and 6 nays, the motion to for House File 2419 be re-referred to State Government Finance as amended is re-referred and passes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Zervas.
Representative Zervas, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 464 to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. I understand this is a short bill, so let's put the clock on you and see how fast you can get this one through. Representative Zervas to the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for hearing the bill today. House File 464 is a study on home care nursing, the workforce shortage. Thousands of hours are unmet in complex care, home nursing needs, and we're trying to find maybe a better mousetrap or a better way to approach that. We had some language in an earlier version of this bill trying to expand the opportunities to staff those hours for some of the non-complex home health care patients. In further discussion with the Nurses Association and the LPNs and RNs, we ended up at a study to study really the true need and what the best way is to address that need. I'll be brief in that. In closing, we have people that are obligated to have services provided to them. The state of Minnesota has deemed them worthy of receiving in-home care, and they're not receiving that care, thousands and thousands of hours every year. Not because we can't afford it, not because they don't deserve it, but because there aren't the employees to fill those hours. And so we're looking at a better way of taking care of folks and maybe a more efficient way, and we're hoping this study will get that done. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Zervas, thank you. Members, questions for Representative Zervas at this time? Seeing none, anyone from the public wishing to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 464? Seeing none, let the record show there were no public testimony. Member questions for Representative Zervas? No one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
The chair did not recognize you at this point, so Representative Zervas, final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
All those in favor of House File 646 being 464, excuse me, being referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. You are on your way.
Thank you, sir.
Members, we are not going to take up House File 2427 today, which brings us to the end of our agenda. And this should bring us, at this point, to the end of our regularly scheduled committee meetings for the 2017 session. Before we adjourn today, I want to give you a little bit of a roadmap. The committee will be meeting again throughout the session, but not on a regular basis, and I'll get to that in just a few minutes. But before I do that, James, thank you so much on behalf of the committee for the hard work that you've done in being our PA. We greatly appreciate that. And Mr. Galvin, thank you for your work on the DFL side as the researcher for this session. Jeremiah Winstead on the GOP side for research, thank you for your hard work as well, sir. And to Amanda Tinsley, our CA, Amanda. And if you ever watch daytime television, they sometimes will change actors. At the beginning of the session, the part of the CA was played by Craig Stone, so I want to thank Craig for his help while Amanda was away on family leave. And I'd also like to thank our CA, Steve Bartel, as well for his work as our CLA this session as well. Steve, thank you. And although she is not here, Ms. Dyson from Nonpartisan Research and Mr. Gehring from Nonpartisan Research as well. Thank you for your time. Members, as I had said, we will be meeting. We have this little thing called the pensions bill that will be coming to the committee when the time is right on that as well. And as Representative Nelson knows and veterans of the committee know, this committee sometimes does get called and pressed into action as the legislative process continues. And so with that, the thanks of the chair to all the members of the committee, we are adjourned.